We're doing Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the laws of bread and other food items that were baked and cooked by a non-Jew. And we discussed that these food items are kosher, but we discussed that our halachot are focusing on situations where we know that the ingredients are kosher, and the only problem is this rabbinic decree that one should not eat food that was baked or cooked by a non-Jew. Halacha Yud Aleph. We're holding Perek Lamed Ches, the 38th chapter in the Ketzur Shulchan Aruch. Halacha Yud Aleph, the 11th halacha. Perot shelo nitbashlu ve'ilan kol tzorkam. If you have fruits that haven't ripened fully on the tree, ve'inan nechanim chayim, and they cannot be eaten raw because they aren't fully ripe. Ela lidei adchak, sheumanim mitagnim otam betzuker. The only way they're edible is because people fry them in sugar. So then we say, Asurim Mishum Bishulei Goyim. Those are forbidden to be eaten if they were fried by a non-Jew. Even though ordinarily we said fruits that are cooked, being that they're edible raw, then the fact that a non-Jew cooked them, we say, doesn't make it forbidden. Because any food that's edible raw, the fact that a non-Jew cooked it doesn't make it forbidden. But these fruits, being that in their raw state before they were cooked, they were not edible, so then they are forbidden. Shechar shetuah v'shel dvash, beer that's made of grain and honey, med, noagim bo etor lishtoto, the custom is to treat it as permissible to drink it, afilu bevayit shemochin to agoyim, even in the places where the non-Jews sell it, meaning the bar, ven bom shum bishulei goyim, and we don't consider it that the non-Jews cooked it, that v'am p'tila v'mayim, because we say that the grain becomes batel in the water. And we discussed that the concept of batel means that halachically we consider it as though it disappeared. When you take a drop of pig's fat, and you're not allowed to do this, but if a drop of pig's fat would fall into a vat of cooking meat, so we say that if it gets mixed in and you have 60 against it, that you can't see it, you can't identify it. So we say it's batel. It exists, but halachically we treat it as though it does not exist. So the same thing here, we say the grain that was cooked with the water to make these beers, we consider it as though it has disappeared in the water. What people do have to check is if they don't use the sediment from wine as part of the process of making the beer, because then there's a problem because we know wine that's touched by a non-Jew, we're not allowed to drink. We're worried maybe it was used for idol worship. Places where people don't take these halachas seriously regarding non-Jewish wine. A person who is a baal nefesh, a person of stature, as far as his service to Hashem, he should be more stringent. Even with beer, he shouldn't drink non-Jewish beer. Uvinyan shtiyat kafe, regarding drinking coffee that's made by a non-Jew, v'chein shakalade, and so to drinking hot cocoa, v'tei etzel goy, and drinking tea by a goy, shomer nafsho yirachek et atzmo. Person watches himself, will distance himself from drinking it. V'yesh matrin nishtot b'derech haray, b'derech kviyut asur. And some permit one to do it in a fashion that you don't do it every day, every so often, but if you're going to go every day and sit with him for a cup of coffee, that's forbidden. So here, we have to discern. If it's someone that you're sitting for a cup of coffee together, so that's exactly what our sages didn't want. They didn't want us to sit and have a friendly relationship with a non-Jew because you might end up marrying his daughter. And if you don't marry his daughter, your son might marry his daughter. The idea is we're not looking to develop these types of relationships. We could have working relationships, and even that our sages cautioned us from. But to start developing friendly relationships, that our sages told us not to do. Let's say you're traveling in the United States, and there's a coffee shop. So back in the Ketzur Shulchan Aruch, so he says that with milk, it's a problem. So milk is the same issue as the milk that we're going to discuss in a second. But coffee straight without milk, that's not a problem. Halacha Yud Gimel. We're coming to the laws of milk that our sages instituted that one should not drink milk that was milked by a non-Jew. that we don't have supervision to know what's in that milk. So Halacha Yud Gimel says the following: Chalav shechalav goy, if we have milk that was milked by a non-Jew, veni sled roeu, and there's no Jew who sees him, asur, that's forbidden, afilu lasot menu gvina, even if you're going to make cheese from it. Ideally, a Jew should be there when they start milking the cow. They'll see that the vessel is clean. They might have just milked their pigs. They might have just milked their camels. Now they're milking this cow. You have to see that that there's nothing left over from the old milk. And the custom is to be even more stringent and to have a separate vessel to use to milk the kosher animals. And when you have maids who are milking the animals in a Jewish home, or in a Jewish barn, any place where she's not walking by a non-Jewish home, she's staying on your ranch, and on your ranch all you have are kosher animals, so then you don't have to worry, where is she going to get non-kosher milk from? If she's milking the cows, so there are only cows here to milk, obviously the milk is all going to be kosher. But if on her way she passes a non-Jewish home, so then we need a Jew present when she milks the cow. Even a little kid, a boy or girl who's 9 years old, that's enough to supervise that she's milking the cow and she's milking it into a kosher vessel. Now, today, the situation has changed. Today we have government supervision. At least in the United States, it's very serious, the FDA. And if someone wants to play around with milk, they're gonna run into serious trouble. My father deals with cheeses, and every so often, the FDA checks up on different factories. And one day he had a guy walk in from the FDA and said, stop your business now, we've got to ask you a few questions. And they sat him down, and they interrogated him. And it turned out that without my father knowing, for about a year and a half, they had been surveillancing all shipments in and out and everywhere they went, and they followed everything. Their supervision is much better than any kosher supervision. No one could supervise like they can. I mean, they were able to stop every truck driver and tell them, you're not allowed to report back to your boss, but now we have to check your shipment. And they check everything. And then after a year and a half, they came in with all their documentation. And they said, explain to us, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So my father said, okay, took out the files and explained it to them. But suddenly he realized, hey, they've been following everything I've been doing for a year and a half. And my father hadn't known. So that's serious supervision. That's something which you can't know. That's why Rabbi Feinstein wrote, and the Chazon Ish also wrote this, that today, this whole rabbinic decree, we're not more lenient. We're just saying that you don't need a Jew supervising because the government is instead of the Jew. Whether this is true in England or anywhere else in the outside of the United States, I don't know. I don't know how the supervision is.
Consider it true in Canada as well.
Yeah, they consider it. People are relying on this leniency all over the world, but I'm not sure they're right in doing so. I'm not sure that anywhere else has a supervision like the FDA. In the United States, I mean, you're talking about they send foods to labs. You don't know it. When they have any reason to doubt anything that's going on by someone, the way it works is if they find someone they're not happy with some of his products, they go to everyone he was dealing with, and they start inspecting them. And they have the resources to do that. So let's say a cheese comes out on the market and they check the foods, they send it to their laboratories, and they see something there that doesn't match what they think should be there. So then they're going to check every stop, you know, the way it works. Someone buys the milk, he makes the cheese, he passes it on to someone who processes the cheese, he passes it on to someone who packages this cheese after it's cut, and it passes many hands before it hits the supermarket. And they're going to check everyone along those lines for a long time. That's something which no hashgacha can do. No one has the resources to do it as well as they do. They also send it to laboratories and check. So that's why in the United States, one can rely on milk. If it says 100% milk, just like it says 100% orange juice, at last check, these things change. You have to check. But at last check, that was okay. Yeah?
So my understanding that you can rely on OUD in the States, but not 100%, because OUD means... There's still their milk sometimes, if it says it has a additive, then it's telling you right there that it has something in it besides milk.
Right.
So it'll say 100% milk, we'll say with vitamin D added. So my understanding is in the States, OUD, they make sure that they don't add anything else, but they trust the people when they... So my understanding is you can't have any milk in the States, but only ones that say OUD.
I don't know. So one has to check with OU. You could call the OU, the CRC, Starkey.
Or some other. But there's also UHT milk.
I don't know what that is.
This is milk that's long like milk. They pasteurize it in a certain way. They do it and they put it in a box. And the process that goes on to make milk UHT milk can only be done with cow's milk. You can't the way they do it. It can't work with anything else. And so all UHT milk by means of this process, because it only works for cows.
So let's see. That's an interesting point.
They invented
how this is my Rob told me, and he works for the OU amongst other people.
Okay. I would check all these things. They change with time. There was a time that people were saying that they were adding vitamins to the milk from non-kosher substances. Whether it's true or not, I never verified it. I don't know.
That in the 70s there were a lot of things that they didn't need hamsters for. Like, no one needed hamsters for tuna or candy or like any of the stuff. People was just accepted in the Orthodox community. These things they're supposed to happen, they're not kosher. And then like slowly they realize, sometimes they make candy with different gelatin that come from pig's fat, and then all these other like weird things that people in the market start doing. Products change.
What about Coca-Cola?
Coca-Cola wasn't kosher.
What?
Originally there was one ingredient in Coca-Cola that was made from
beaver juice.
What?
Beaver juice.
Oh yeah. But Jews drank all sorts of Jews drank it anyway. So finally they went.
That's a long story.
Yeah.
There's
a chew vomit.
Wow.
Rabbi by the name of Rabbi Silver who had a radio program. Someone called in and asked him, is Coca-Cola kosher? So he said I wouldn't drink it. So Coca-Cola sued him. They went to court and towards the end of the court case, looked like he was winning the case because he said, look, you're not giving away your ingredients. And kashrus-wise, I told the people correctly, I wouldn't drink it. You're not giving us your ingredients. So there was a long court case. And then when they saw that he was going to win, so they wanted to settle. So they told him they'd give him the ingredients. So they filled him in on the ingredients. And they closed the court case. And the next week, someone called in and asked, can one drink Coca-Cola? So he said, well, it's kosher, but I wouldn't drink it. Halacha Yud Dalit. But you have to check. You should know Coca-Cola has a few formulas. The formula in Israel is different than the formula in the United States. There's a difference between Eastern United States and Western United States and China. I know because I was in the United States last year, Pesach, and then we suddenly found that the Coke didn't have a Hechsher for Pesach. So we called the CRC, and they told us that it depends where it was manufactured, that there are differences between the Coca-Cola formulas.
The Coke Museum in
Atlanta.
Okay, Yud Dalit. Gvinot Agoyim Asurot. You know what? Okay, we'll leave Yud Dalit and Tetzvav for next week. Next week.